Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 26, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a shivering Scott Long.
And tired. You don't want to mix those two together. You might be in the, like, Jack Nicholson in The Shining, just sitting there frozen at the end of the movie.
You know, here's the thing. For folks that don't know, I was up in Minnesota this week, and we're going to devote the whole show to this week to our Ante Up Poker Tour event at Running Aces Harness Park. I had a great time up there. In Minneapolis, and now I'm in Chicago, and we'll talk about that on next week's show. But if you're not following the news, and as much as a news consumer as I am, I really would not have realized this was going on had I not been coming to Minnesota. But because it was 87 degrees for a solid week in Florida before I left.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I don't know what it still is down there.
But, still hot.
And the day before I flew up to Minnesota, I saw some people on Facebook going with these weather maps with 8 to 12 inches of snow. And I'm like, whoa, back Jeez. Up. It's late April. Where is there snow? And so, you know, where there's snow, there's cold. And I got to say, I have just been miserable in terms of the weather. I mean, the rest of the experience has been great, and I got some good stories and stuff, and obviously we'll talk about the fantastic event Running Aces, but it was brutal up here. And you know it's bad. You know it's bad when everybody that lives in Minnesota was complaining about it, too. Because, you know, my little stock line walking around is, you know, you guys don't have to live here.
Yeah.
You know, you can you don't have to go all the way to Florida if you don't want to sweat, but you can move somewhere else. But these people choose to live there, and they're like, this has to stop at some point. And the funniest thing about the weather, on Saturday, the forecast 70 degrees in Minneapolis.
Oh, man.
It's just like Mother Nature is like, you know what, who am I going to piss off this week?
Let's screw what's got.
I haven't messed with this long guy in a while. How about we make him drive through a blinding snowstorm, which I'm not making up, in the middle of the night, and then the week after he leaves, beach balls for everyone.
Snowballs to beach balls to busting balls.
Oh, man. I gotta tell you, you know, I thought that there was a global warming problem in the world. That's what the mainstream media wants us to believe, right?
Yeah.
I'm right now more worried about a global cooling problem right now. There should not be snow anywhere in the continental United States after April 1st.
Sometimes it snows in April. And by the way, that was written by Prince, who actually is from Minnesota. So there you go. Sometimes it snows in April, buddy. Right off the top of my head right there. That's pretty good.
All right, well, enough about the dreadful weather, but had a great event at Running Aces. The folks up there just did a phenomenal job with their Ante Up Poker Tour event, which is the Ante Up Midwest Championship, and just a lot of great stuff to talk about, and just let the folks know, because I'm on the road here, we're going to an abbreviated show with all of our normal fun stuff. We'll be back next week, but this week we did a bunch of stuff from the Ante Up Poker Tour event to talk about, and this was our third event, and it just played out over the last couple weeks with some player-friendly structures that everybody was talking about at the event. Obviously, I was up there for three frightful, frigid days. Our good friends at Fifth Street Radio Mark and Mark, as I like to call them, were up there. And, of course, our Minnesota ambassador, John Poker Geek MN Somsky, was on site for almost the entire event. And that was funny, too. He was like, I went out to dinner with him and his wife, and then he came back and was on site for the main event. And he's like, you know what, Scott? This has been great. It's been a phenomenal 2 weeks. I'm so glad I've been out here. But I'm glad it's ending because I need to get back to my normal life.
I know, and that's all I wonder when I see all of his tweets and he's winning an event and he's playing in it, and I'm like, he's married, right? Doesn't he have a wife? I mean, she can't be happy. I feel so bad that he's going through all that. He's
so
devoted.
Not only a wife, but a real job, real full-time job, you know,
yeah.
On top of this. And he was there every night playing almost every event. And again, we'll talk about the structures right here at the top of it, but the structures were really good. So he put in a lot of hours there playing, which is real stressful, I think. And then when he wasn't playing, you know, time watching and talking to people and covering it. And, you know, people, you know, today I was hanging out with Chicago Joe, and he's like, Scott, I don't know how you do it. You're city to city and this and this and that. I got nothing on PokerGeek.
I know.
The last couple of weeks. I mean, that was truly Hubin's work from him. But yeah, let's talk about the structures a little bit. You know, we had Tristan Wilberg, their tournament director at Running Aces, on the show to preview it, and we did spend a lot of time talking about the structures and how he, you know, really wanted the structures that people didn't have to drive for. You know, he wanted the, you know, every possible level he could put in there, you know, decent chip stacks depending on the buy-in of the tournament. And it all sounded great, and when I got there, it really was great to actually see it in person. But to give you an idea of how good these structures were, how much value players got out of them, we were about, the main event had, I believe, three day ones, and then it finished up on day two on Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so at this point, when I pretty much bailed out and had to go back to the hotel because I was seeing spacemen running across the tables, because I was so tired, we were about 18 hours into it. Down to 12 players left. The average chip stack was about 237,000, and blinds were at 3,000-6,000.
Wow.
I mean, just stop and think about that for a minute. I mean, these people really, and then it went on, I think the tournament lasted another 7 hours.
I mean, that's 40 big blinds. That's huge.
Yeah, and that's the average, too.
And that's the average stack is 40 big blinds. That's
and
massive.
I believe, because I was listening to Fifth Street Radio when I was there, the shortest stack was 20 big blinds at that point, which is still
a
decent amount. So, I mean, they had a lot of play there. This thing probably would have gone longer, but there was some chop talk, and we'll get into that later. But this thing could have gone on quite a while. So, obviously, that's some players don't like to play a long event like that, but for an $1,100 buy-in, those players certainly got the price of admission with this structure.
Man, that's so awesome. I love it when you know, a tournament director and a poker room manager can do that for their players and for our event and things like that, when they could just take the time to say, you know what, we really do care about the players, we really want them to have an event that's worth playing, and I'm sure that no one walked away from that tournament thinking they didn't get value. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing, too, that I thought was really genius, and I wish other rooms would go with this, the structure was the same for every single event. You know, all the levels were in there for every event.
Right.
What changed were starting chip stacks and the length of the levels. So, and, you know, it gave it some consistency throughout it. So, I mean, if you played in the $50 rebuy event, you knew the structure was the same as the people playing in the main event. And that was really funny, too, because when I went out of the $50 event, blinds were something ridiculous, like 10,000, 20,000. And that event started at 11. I was out like 6 hours in. And then I went over, and 6 hours later in the main event, which had been going on for 18 hours, they were still at 3-6. And it's just those things you go, oh, that's kind of interesting. I'm kind of glad I was in the event I was in, because I can't play this long. But speaking of the main event, our champion, Blake Bond, He'll be on the cover of the June issue. He's going to get that personalized Annie Up Tour Champion jacket. Also, a ton of cash as well, too. But I think the secondary story of this series after the structure was just the quality of the play. I was in the last event at event 12, I think, and the folks in that, they were looking over at the main event, which was down at that point to three tables, maybe about 24 players left, and the people at my Omaha event were all kind of regulars at Running Aces, and they said, I wouldn't want to play with any of those 24 players. They're all really, really, I mean, they're like, those are the best 24 players in this region. And, you know, they said, yeah, it was funny as they're talking about, well, that's the softest table, and it's not soft. But, you know, they decided that this table three or whatever was the one they had to play. That was the one they would have been in. And then they're like, this other one, that one is just a murderer's row. So, it definitely brought out good play. So this was a hard-fought win for Blake, and I think he's being interviewed on Fifth Street Radio tonight, which is Wednesday. So, folks, by the time they're listening to our show, can go back and listen to the archives of that and hear more from him. My understanding, again, I didn't make it all the way to the end, but I believe it was the final five agreed to each take $15,000. And then play for the title and bracelet. You know, had that deal not happened, gosh, they could still be playing right now with that structure. So, but definitely, it was a very competitive event, and folks in it definitely earned their money.
Well, you know, I knew Blake. I mean, he'd won something before, and he's been in our magazine a lot. And I was, well, as soon as I saw his name, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. He's really good up there. Then I saw the results, and I'm like, wow, I know all these players, and I live in Florida, and I don't even play up there. So it definitely was a quality Final 24 or so. So that's cool. And that's, it makes you feel good, too, that all these the quality players came out for our event from that area. So you know that they respected that what Running Aces was going to put together, and they respected Annie Up and everything. So very happy to see those names and to see him on top, too. That really helps out.
And I'll tell you the other thing about it, too, is, you know, sitting there watching it, and it, I guess you can say this about any big major event when you watch it, but I always think it's eye-opening to watch really good players play against really good players.
Yeah.
And see, I mean, there's stuff where, you know, a short stack, that 20 big blind shoved, and the big blind thought about it for a while and flashed an ace and folded. You know, you just don't see stuff like that in the normal $100, you know, donkey fest that most of us play in.
Yeah.
You know, it's an instant call for the big blind, no matter what the kicker is, but there, it's a, you know, I'm giving you respect. I know that I can't beat you with this. And so that was fun to watch.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I loved all the times I went back to Connecticut to cover the World Poker Tour for the show way back when. The same thing. You're watching these players who are just playing on such a high level, and you just know that they're thinking that I know what you're thinking, that I'm thinking that you're thinking this kind of thing. And it's really a treat. That's the kind of stuff that's really a treat to watch.
Yeah. Absolutely, and it was a blast. So the folks that tuned into the live stream, which we'll talk about a little bit later, I think got a real treat watching that. But they had plenty of other events too, 11 other events on the schedule, and some unique ones, and folks, if they remember back when we did a preview, but they had this $250 event that had five starting flights, I believe it was,
mm-hmm.
That ended up drawing more than 270 players. And you know, I'm kind of being converted on these multi-day starting flights. You know, the downside is if you're traveling or something, you don't want to, you know, play day 1A and then have 2 weeks off before you get back or something ridiculous like that. But I think over the course of the week, I mean, it's great, particularly if you have a good base of local players, and I think that's what they had here. I mean, you could see. You know, getting 270 out for that 250 was in large part because they had five times for people to get in, and then
right.
You know, they had that chip buyback too, so you could, you know, this encouragement to play more events, more day ones as well too. I definitely think it ended up being a pretty cool event. They also had this, I guess I'm calling it an invitational thing, but what they did is, if you had a combined $750 and buy-ins by the time this invitational event, which I think was events 7 or 8 or something like that. So obviously, I mean, it was before the main event started, where you could just buy it, you'd automatically be in.
Right.
If you did $750 buy-ins, then you got invited to this $50 tournament or something with rebuys and stuff. But you couldn't just buy it away, and you had to be qualified. So. And I think 34 qualified for that. So, I mean, that's kind of cool that there are 34 people that early on that did 750. I mean, to do that, I mean, you'd have to play both the 250 and the 500, which I think is what most people did, or really a bunch of the smaller events. So it's good to see people playing multiple events as well, too. And then, of course, the last event, Event 12, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, was No Limit Omaha. Yeah, not Pot Limit Omaha, No Limit Omaha.
Yeah, yeah.
And, Poker Geek and I had some good conversations about that, and then talking to Tristan afterwards, when we both did not do quite so well in it about that format. But Tristan's tournament director told me he put it on the schedule this time because they've started getting a really popular. Again, it's Minnesota, so they have it's everything spread limit really.
Yeah,
but the spread is just so big now. You can go from 2 to 100, so it's essentially like a normal no limit game. But they're 2 to 100 Omaha game. Was getting going several nights a week, and he thought this would be a good event to put on the schedule. And, I think some of the people I was talking to in the event were kind of disappointed that they didn't get more. I think they ended up with 34, 37, something like that. But they're getting to that point. I mean, they're developing that game in that market. And I think next year, if they put it back on the schedule, then more people are going to play as well. But
I love it. I wish we would play it in our home game. I wish we would call it.
All right. Well, I mean, hey, no one's saying you can't.
Okay, I'm going to.
I just want to warn you, I have practice now.
So. Oh, okay, yeah, you got experience on that.
I'm not the donkey that I was when I entered the tournament.
Okay, I'll have to keep that in mind. But no, but really, I mean, I like to play. You know, when I play with my family, they only want to play No Limit. They don't want to play anything else. So, but they like to play different games. So I play No Limit Omaha like all the time. I love it. I love it. So I mean, it's crazy. But you know, there are times where people. You know, they're going to want to go in with their draws and stuff, and that's when you make all your money. So I like it. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll talk about that right now. I mean, because Geek and I both, we flamed out in it pretty early, and then we're talking about it. I mean, the problem I had with it is I'm used to playing Limit Omaha or Pot Limit.
Yeah.
And you don't think there's really much of a difference between Pot Limit and No Limit, but there really is when you sit down and think about how to play hands. And you know, one of the things that I remembered, and not trying to get people upset by mentioning his name on the show, but, you know, Howard Lederer's chapter in the Full Tilt book was essentially when he explaining why it's played pot limit is because the odds, if you have pocket aces, the proper play is to go all in pre-flop.
Yeah.
That's why you have the pot limit thing, prevents you from being able to do that and make it a more layered game. Now, that doesn't mean that when I got pocket aces, I felt like I had to go all in every time, though once I did. But taking that pot limit off is really tough. And I think one of the things that I was talking to Geek about was, you know, I like to have that cap because it keeps the game a little bit more controlled. I mean, for example, if I have like, I had a hand with pocket aces, one of them was suited, I think, right? And of course, this is a high only tournament, not high low. But we had about 6 limpers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really want to go all in there, but that seemed to be the move I had to make with 6 limpers, you know, because that's kind of what you would do with No Limit. I mean, we weren't terribly deep stacked at that point, but I would have preferred to have that cap because what I wanted is I wanted some action. I didn't want to just pick up that dead money, but I wanted to thin the field because I didn't want to, you know, go to battle with 6 people with, you know, pocket aces, which is not a terrifically great hand without something else. So if I was forced to have that cap, I would have bet pot. It would have been a decent bet, and it might have thinned the field a little bit. Now, obviously, there's nothing stopping me from betting pot there if I wanted to.
Right.
But then at that point, then you're like, all right, do I want to put this false, restraint on me, or is the proper play for me to go all in here? And that's what I struggled with, I think, the whole tournament.
Hmm. So you felt like if you treated it like pot limit, you would have handcuffed yourself, yet you were hoping for a handcuff that you didn't really want.
It's like anything in life. If someone, let's say you have, we're getting a deck on our house built, right?
Yeah.
So this morning I was sitting in the airport and I'm going over four different colors of composite material via email with my wife. And, you know, that's great for the marriage. And we had four choices, right? Now, if the guy came to us with only two choices, the decision would be a lot easier, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
But the more choices you get, the harder the decision gets. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is if it's pot limit, it takes some of the choices away, so it's not as agonizing. Is that a better way of saying it?
Yeah. And I'd have a question for you. You know when we play in the home game, or even when you play on the... You know, like if you're playing on live somewhere else and somehow you're playing PLO, which I don't think I've really played PLO live anywhere but the home game, but it seems like when I play it online, how about that? Everybody always, because it's pot limit, they automatically feel like they have to bet pot, and they bet pot. And you got this massive size. But when we change anything else to no limit, when we play no limit deuce to seven, we play no limit hold'em, the pots tend to be pretty small, and every once in a while you'll have a big pot because two big hands get coolered or something. But really, it seems like the game is more controlled when it's no limit than pot limit, so wouldn't that have been the case with your tournament?
Well, here's the difference. You're right. Our home game is like that, and I like it. In this tournament, it was not that way. We had the very first hand, we had a three-way all-in.
Oh, jeez.
Of the tournament.
Oh, man.
And it was re-entry. It wasn't a rebuy, but it was re-entry. So, I mean, that contributes some of it. You know, if you already know that, you know, hey, if I get knocked out, I'm going to walk back up to the counter and get back in. But that shouldn't happen and wouldn't happen in a pot limit, right? Yeah, because if it's pot limit, you know, you'd probably bet a pot. Maybe at most it would get repotted pre-flop.
Yeah.
And then, again, as everybody knows in Omaha, you know, your hand gets really well-defined on the flop in Omaha. So at that point, one or two of those folks probably would have dropped out because their hand just didn't look terrific at all after the flop. But since there's no limit, it was just easy for them all to get it all in, and then just, you know, it's bingo at that point.
Yeah.
And they were terrible hands. But that was the other part that I struggled with, is that there were a lot of people shoving with top pair.
Yeah.
Which is just terrible in Omaha.
Yeah.
In general. So, you know, when I'm seeing that, so one half my brain is trying to reconcile with the fact that I'm playing no limit rather than pot limit. The other half of my brain is like, these people are playing pretty poorly, but because it's no limit, they can really hurt you.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody moves all in, you know, for 40x or something, it kind of messes up the odds, and then at the point you're like, you know what? You have some protection, I guess, with pot limit. You know, if you can't do that with top pair. Because then at that point, the problem is now you've got to figure out, hey, is this guy doing what he just did the last time, going all in with top pair, or does now he have something? But even if he's doing with top pair now, he's got more cards in his hand, so he's got a better chance
to suck out.
Yeah. And of course, you have the same card, so maybe the odds end up working. But, you know, it puts you in a much... I think the no limit makes this an easier game for the less skilled Omaha players.
Oh, that's definite. I never doubt that. That's 100% true, I think. It is weird. To me, it sounds like it would be somebody who likes no limit hold'em and is like, hey, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot. How could it be? It's like three hold'em hands. Why not play it? And they don't really know how to play the game or understand it's a game of the nuts, but I can see how that would be very frustrating for you.
Yeah, so I ended up going out by getting myself stuck in a situation I shouldn't, and I probably would have got myself stuck in the same situation had big pot limit, but it was just one of those things where, like, ugh. You know, you get that point in the hand, you're like, boy, not only did I misplay this, but I misplayed it for my tournament life, and that hurts.
That sucks, know?
And I think Geek was the same way. I forget what his hand was. So we didn't do well there, but we did well elsewhere. And by we, mostly Poker Geek.
Okay.
He really had a phenomenal series. That Invitational I told you about, he won that.
Awesome.
completely won it, and that came with a main event. They added a main event seat, so he got to play the main event essentially for free on top of, you know, some nice little cash. And earlier in the series, he finished 7th in the $500 event, which is pretty nice cash as well, too. So, yeah, Mrs. Geek was quite happy at dinner when I was out. I was asking her about the white tax, and she had no idea what the white tax was.
Nice.
So my guess is Poker Geek is not going to be returning any phone calls from me.
This guy is out there busting his hump for us, being one of the greatest ambassadors we could ever ask for, and you throw him under the bus to his wife. Very nice. Way to play. Jeez.
And he also made it to day two of the main event, too. So
wow.
He had a really good series.
Did his brother play? Was his brother around?
You know, I meant to ask him about that. I don't think so. And I meant to ask him about that at dinner, but we were talking about, all of us are on diets, so. Yeah, that's what you do. You go out for a nice dinner is talk about diets. But I meant to ask him about that, and I forgot. But I didn't see him, and I think if he would have been there,
he would have
mentioned it to me. But, I wish I could have got there a little earlier, other than the temperature. I wish I could have got there later, but... I only got to play in two, obviously the Omaha I told you about, but I did play the $50 three buys tournament. And I gotta say, this was one of the more interesting tournaments that I played in quite a while.
Did you rebuy at all?
I did. I did one rebuy, and then I did the add-on. So I was in for, and the rebuys were 30. So I was in for 110.
Okay.
Ended up finishing 7th for 282.
Nice.
And of course, you know, people kept checking. Our ad reps are there. Kept checking on me. Mark Wittig, one of our listeners, came out and played that event. He went out. Just before the final table, it felt bad. But so people walked by, and I had a nice stack for quite a while. And then obviously it went on to cash, so they're like, "Ah, you must have had a great day." And I'm like, "All right." So it was 282 that I won.
Yeah.
Minus the 110 that I put in.
Right.
Minus the tip, which I think was like $20 or something, $25. 25, yeah, because I gave him a green chip. And then minus the $100 for the Omaha that I flamed out in. So my net take on that great tournament of 7 hours of stellar no-limit play was about $50. Not that I'm complaining.
$6.50 an hour.
But it's funny, when people walk by, they see, "Oh, man, you must have had a great great day." I'm like, yeah. I think this is a good point of discussion. I mean, I'm a big fan. I think we talked about it with Sam with our Antiup World Championship event. You know, we have some 110s on this buy-ins on the schedule there. I'm a big fan of these lower buy-ins for these series because it opens it up to more people, right?
Sure.
You can afford $1,100 or $500, even $250 for that matter. So I like the fact that it was a $50 with rebuys. The flip side is that you bring in your normal tournament crowd at that point. And not trying to be critical or elitist or not, but these are not the type of people that you would normally see in a tournament series, right? It started when we sat down, a couple people at the table didn't realize it was rebuys, didn't ask about the rebuys. They give you the option, like in most rebuy tournaments, if you want to do your first rebuy right away, you can.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody at the table except for me did it. I'm like, "I'm not giving you another $30 until I need it." And then they're talking about the add-ons, and the guy's like, "Well, they really should have called this a $110 tournament." And I'm like, "No, they shouldn't have. It's a $50 tournament. Just because you feel like you need to buy 30 now, and then that you're guaranteeing you're planning on buying another 30, that's a $110 tournament for you, sir." Some of us are hoping to get out of here for 50. Of course, and I didn't. But and then there was a guy at our table that made me believe, and the rest of us at the table, that this was his first poker tournament ever.
Really?
And after every hand, he would ask a question, and he'd always follow up by saying, "I'm sorry, this is just my first tournament trying to learn." I mean, it was almost like a Chatty Cathy doll.
Yeah,
he kept pulling the string, and eventually I wanted to be, "Sir, ask all the questions you want. I want you to learn, but you don't need to follow it by, 'I'm sorry, this is my first tournament.'" Well established, this is your first tournament. He really sold me on it. And the reason I'm saying he sold me on it, because after the tournament, I was talking to somebody, and I'm like, Yeah, it was kind of funny, that guy, that his first tournament. They're like, no, he's here every week, and he does that same thing every week.
You got to be kidding. And,
but I don't think he was, like, doing his routine. I really think this is one of these guys where the pillow sucks it out when he sleeps at night. And that's what these people, the regulars, are saying. He's like, yeah, we explain all that stuff to him every week, and he comes in and asks the same stuff. But you know, he was selling it well by, he called the blinds anties. He's like, so the anties are up now? And we're like, well, you know, the blinds are 5,100 now. He's like, all right. So you can imagine the enjoyment you get when the ante part of the tournament kicks in. Because now there are actual anties.
Yeah.
Plus blinds. And that just blows his mind. He's looking around the table and he's like, okay, but it's not my big ante. Is this my small ante?
It's not my big ante.
And like, no, that's just your normal ante. The big blinds are over here. Okay. I'm only bringing this up for the enjoyment of the show. I'm not picking on the guy, because really, I don't know whether it really was his first tournament or not, or whether he was sharking me or not. But it kind of took me back to when I started, you know. And I think a lot of people, when they started, you just don't understand anything. So what he would do with his ante, if it was, let's say the ante was a quarter, right? And he had no green chips, he just had a black, right? All right. He would hold on to the black behind the line, like, you know, like Kung Fu death grip.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dude were like, you can put your ante in. He's like, I know. And she's like, okay. You put in the line. He's like, but I don't want to bet all this. She's like, no, it's all right. I'll make change. And he really didn't believe her. So what he would do then, after he would get stressed out that we all had our green chips in there, and she collected the antes, and he's still holding on to his, you know. He would give it to the guy next to him and ask for change. The guy would give him change, and then he'd put it in and he'd feel comfortable about it. So just stuff like that, you know, get on nothing enjoyable. But I ended up taking him out because he hopelessly overplayed a gut shot or something like that. And I knew he would, so that got me on the way to the final table, which was fun.
Well, you know, that's the same. I think I talked about this the last time I played in the charity event over in Daytona when you were on the road. You know, that one guy, we're 9-10 hours in, and he still doesn't realize he has to put his ante up, and we've been playing for 7 hours with antes. And it's like, every hand, you've literally played, if you think it's 200 to 300 hands with antes, and you don't know to still to put it up every... So it's the same thing, you know, you don't know what you're going to be up against when you're in these types of events.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crazy.
But yeah, and the play was just, it's what you call frustrating. I mean, you need to learn to deal with this, right? But I just thought I'd move past that. I mean... my first the actual real rebuy I had to do, I had ace king and raised it a bunch of limpers. I raised it like 4 or 5x, and guy called me with king four off.
Oh jeez!
And the flop, of course, came king 4x.
Oh jeez!
And got it in, and you know, hey, nice hand.
Oh man!
Oh, that was the other thing about the guy that is the first tournament. I forgot about this. I should have made the notes. He flopped quads, you know, always happens first tournament,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Got the guy all in, so he got action. The guy turned over his card. I think he had a boat, right? And then he went, aha! Just like that. Turned his two twos, put them on top of the other twos on the flop.
Oh, I hate that.
It's like, I've got them all! And then... he reached into the pot and grabbed all the chips and dragged them to him.
Oh, no.
And the dealer was like, sir, do not ever do that again. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm just so excited. I won. I got quads.
Oh,
meanwhile, there's this other guy peeling off $30 out of his wall to rebuy in, you know, with top boat.
Oh, my God. It's like Worm in Atlantic City grabbing chips from Mike. Sir, you got to buy your chips from me. Oh my god, crazy.
Oh man, but it was a fun tournament. I enjoyed it, and obviously it's always fun when you walk away with a little bit of cash. But I mentioned Fifth Street Radio was there. Mark Hoke and Mark Rhodes did just an absolutely amazing job. They did the first two nights that we were there, Friday and Saturday, they did their normal show that they're always on the air. They just recorded it from there. And they have this great set. And what's funny is I thought they had a big travel trailer or something they put all this in, because that movie was huge.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a big Rector set, and then they, you know, they had, you know, all their audio, digital equipment, computers, cameras, all that stuff. The last day after everything was done, I helped them carry some stuff out. Nope, just a minivan.
Squeeze it all in there, huh?
Huge, like, cabinet that was handmade, and I'm like, "There's no way that's fitting in there." And they're like, "Oh yeah, absolutely," and it fit perfect.
Jeez.
I don't know if they actually measured, and that's custom. How they built it.
Yeah, they probably customed it. Yeah.
But they know what they're doing. So, but yeah, so they did the two normal ones, and then they did the live stream of the final table. They started that at 7 p.m. Of course, it went all the way to like 6 a.m. before it was done. You know, you and I had done commentary for the live streams and even the TV. I mean, to come up with that much material, I mean, to be on for, what was it, 11 hours?
Yeah.
Just the two of them? That's tough. That's tough. So I give them a lot of credit. And they had people up in the chat box all the way to the end. So, I mean, you know, I think the value of these live streams at the room, too, that I was talking to that night when they were like, "Hey, what's this going on?" And they're like, "Oh, I can watch it on my phone." I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely." He's like, "Oh, that's great. I know all these players. I want to watch this until it ends." So it was kind of cool to see that. But the night before they did their regular show, and they do this match game thing, you know, like the Gene Rayburn thing.
Yeah, Gene Rayburn, yeah.
But actually, it's almost like Name That Tune, because you had to, like, bid. You know, I can get four of those. All right. So I don't know what they really call the match game. But I was supposed to be on it, but I was on a phone call and missed it. So I came over later, and I was sitting there when they were asking them. I'm like, Fran Tarkenton, DJ Cloutier. So when they got done, Mark asked me to sit down, and he asked me some of the questions to see how well I did. And of course, I did much better. But that was a lot of fun to play, tuning in on those for him. But the funniest part of the Fifth Street Radio is, all right, so we're sitting there with this big set, right?
Yeah.
Fifth Street Radio, microphones, we got headsets on. The only thing that they don't have in this set that I think they're going to need to buy with their next paycheck is one of those little flashing on-air signs.
Oh, yeah, you got to know when you're on.
Because we were there the very first day we were talking, and one of our ad reps just got there and walked up. "Hey, how you guys doing? How's your flight, Scott?" Like, what do you do at that point? You're in the middle of a show, and you got somebody talking. You don't want to be rude, but at the same time. So it happened the second day. We were I was watching the match game thing, right? And John Morgan, you know John Morgan?
Yes, I do know John Morgan.
Yeah, for folks know, he was the guy in the big drop, whatever, Million Dollar, right? And that crazy hand where folding quads, right?
Yeah.
He just walks over and he's like, "Hey guys, how you doing?" And they're middle of the match game. So it's the tournament director and Mark, and I'm sitting there on the side, kind of half in the show. "This is a great tournament, isn't it? Blah, blah, blah." And then, so Mark Hoke was the host, and he's like, "All right, we're going to run with this." So we just stopped the match game and just talked to John Morgan for a while until he decided to walk away. And then they picked up back the match game. And I was asking him the next day, I'm like, you know, "Hey, you handle that like professional." And he's like, "Scott, I got to tell you, we're at the World Series last year. If I had a nickel for every time someone did that, I could have played the main event last year."
How could they not learn from that? They got definitely get that sign. They can't do it in a public place like that and not have a sign.
But yeah, it was funny. But and it was really nice to meet John Morgan, and I felt bad because he introduced himself to me during this part. You know, where we're on the show, right?
Yeah.
So I could really say, "Hi, nice to meet you. I would like to talk to him more." But you know, so he probably thinks I'm really rude because I just didn't realize. But it was his birthday. He made a real deep run in the main event, and there were a lot of people rooting for him. They thought it would have been a great story where they won. And on the day two, the entire side of the room sang happy birthday to him.
Oh, cool. And it wasn't even his birthday. No, I'm just kidding. That's cool. Yeah, he's a great guy. And he's, I think, part of that million-dollar money drop thing was, you know, any money he won, too, was going to go back to his players and stuff or something of that nature. I remember the story that we ran about it. Just a great guy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you had characters like that were great. So, but that was it for the Running Aces event. And just remind everybody else, everybody go to AntiUpPokerTour.com for details on our upcoming events, including May 17th to 26th at Downstream Casino Resort in Oklahoma, and then July 28th through August 3rd, the Antioch Poker Tour World Championship at the Hard Rock Musicon in the Dominican Republic. We have fewer than 20 rooms left at our discounted rate for that. If you're interested in booking, go to antiupmagazine.com/worldchampionship and click on the booking link there and get your room before they are all gone, and you have to pay rack rate, which no one wants to do.
No, get our rate while you can.
But the day of the show, some fun stuff afterwards. I stuck around for a couple days. Some friends, Ramsey, our cruise manager, flew up, and so we just had a couple days hanging out, doing what we do, you know, cigars and poker and stuff. But we went to a cigar shop, and it's essentially people just go there all day just to sit around and smoke cigars, right?
Man.
Had tables and chairs there. And they play cards, and, you know, we play for 2 Skittles, 4 Skittles in our home game.
Yeah.
They don't even play for a full Skittle.
No.
Entire pot there. Yeah. I mean, it's really just a social thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And these people are all super rich. You know, they just, like, play for the fun, right?
So it's like Mortimer and their dollar bet, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And we got into this thing where we talked about, they taught me how to play cribbage, which I'll talk about in a minute, which is a lot of fun. But they played a different version there, and Ramsey was like, I don't know why they don't play like that. And our friend that lives there, that goes there all the day, said, I'm telling you right now, that amount of money, a dollar, does not cross the table in this place.
Wow.
It's just too much for them. So I think it was just kind of cool to see people actually truly enjoying the game, because I think that's one of the things that, you know, we talk about playing poker a lot, especially after Black Friday, you know. You know, for some of us, you need to have that thing on the line, or it's just not as much fun.
Yeah.
And for these folks, and I'm not saying everybody's like that, I think that there's a lot of people that don't feel like there needs to be something on the line. But it was really refreshing to see people that have... men of means, let's say, just sitting there enjoying the conversation and playing the game and not trying to win or lose. I mean, either they want to win. I mean, there's a lot of trash talking going on, but it wasn't about money. It was just about, you know, being social.
Yeah, about being social and enjoying the game for the game.
Now, we did play some Chinese. I haven't converted these people to the open face Chinese, so you're working your magic on these folks. but we played a regular Chinese, and I was the first to read by 3 times. I got to learn to surrender. But I told him, I'm like, I've been playing nothing but open-faced Chinese for the last 3 months. I haven't played a hand of real Chinese in 3 months, so I had to reteach myself the game.
Yeah.
But then they're like, all right, we're going to teach you cribbage. And have you played cribbage?
Let me tell you this. I played, when I was a kid, I used to watch my best friend's dad play all the time with my other best friend's dad. And I couldn't figure it out. So then there's actually an app for it. And yeah. I got the app, and I just couldn't... I'm too old now to pay attention long enough to really learn it and get the thing. But I did know it a little bit for a little while. It's got the board and all that too, right? The little pegs. And,
yeah,
I did know it for a little bit, but I would be interested in hearing what you had to say about it.
Well, yeah, as with most games, I'm totally obsessed with it now. And downloaded the app while I was in the cigar shop.
Mm-hmm.
And playing it on the way out of the car. I wanted to play it. I don't know really the relation of cribbage to poker, but I mean, essentially, it's you can play it heads up or with 3 or 4 people, and you don't really have poker hands so much as it's a you know. But there are poker elements to it. I mean, one of the big things that I had to learn, and I'm still learning, because I've only played it for a couple of days now. Is keeping track of the cards.
Yeah, the cards, yeah.
So it's very, I mean, I think a good cribbage player would be a good stud player, or a good stud player would be a good cribbage player, because that's really the most important thing. I mean, some of the other stuff is not brain surgery. And I think the guys who are teaching me is like, you know, hey, it's a lot like Chinese, you know. There's a very thin edge for players, and the players that get that edge are the ones that are successful at this game.
Yeah.
In general, I mean, anybody can go in there and do all right, but it's do better all right. You gotta, and a lot of it's tracking the cards, knowing what your partner threw away or what other people don't have, so you know what card to throw next. But a lot of fun, and what was the funniest thing about it is that, you know, I've seen the cribbage board before, too. You know, the wood thing with the pegs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
2013 now, so everybody's got a cribbage app and the iPad. So they have the little scoreboard on the app, and you just push a button for 1 point, you know. Yeah. But it still has the racetrack on the app screen.
Right, yeah, mine did too, yeah.
And I'm like, all right, so is that just there for decoration? And they're like, yeah, pretty much. And I'm like, that's kind of sad, isn't it? And then they're like, well, no, I mean, you know, if you make a mistake entering, then it saves where you were the last time, so you can go back and count. And I'm like, okay. Hey, nice justification.
It's the aesthetics of it, too, you know. There's some people are just old school and traditionalists, but I used to love the board. I used to think, oh, my God, I'm going to make one of these boards, because you got to be so precise with a drill and, you know, to make the board, because it's a million little holes in the board. It's pretty wild.
Gosh, yeah.
So you're hooked on it now, really.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I used to, when I was sitting, you know, when I'm waiting for stuff, you know, I used to play Words for Friends, gave up on that. Then I got my OpenFace Chinese app. Totally did that. Now I got the cribbage app. I played that on the plane today. I saved the company $8, which you'll be happy to know. I did not get the internet package, and I just played cribbage the entire flight from Minneapolis to Chicago.
Oh, man, things are tightening up when Scott's passing up the internet package.
Oh, man. All right, well, to end the show on a funny note, I know I've heard about this before, and I'm curious whether you have, too. I'm trying to place where I heard about it before. But have you heard of the 557 Club?
I have not.
Okay. So I must have heard it from someone else. Now, it was featured in Minnesota Poker Magazine. And maybe, perhaps, somebody sent me that link, but it might have been one of our listeners that told me about this game going on. But I actually got to go to the 557 Club this time.
Okay.
Now, it sounds like it's one of the exclusive underground games, you know, like the one I went to in Maine. Not at all. But it is a tremendous story, and I can see why another magazine did a story on it. Essentially, this is a friend of one of my friends that was there. Had some guys 15 years ago just come over and play cards, you know, like we do for a home game, right? Kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So eventually, he kicked the cars out of the garage. And turned it into this ultimate man cave, except there were women there too hanging out and playing, so it's not really truly a man cave, but
it's a cave.
it's his garage. They had two poker tables in there, a walk-in humidor, which he bought off Craigslist and rebuilt. They had like a Ms. Pac-Man machine, a pinball machine. They had one of those little kegerators.
Oh, yeah.
They had vending machines where you actually had to put coins in. To get your Snickers or your Diet Dr. Pepper. And a big projection TV, and then Dave, the guy that owns the house, is like, I put the projection TV in, and the people with the back to it started whining, so I had to go out and buy other TVs to put around so everybody could see it. So I've got like four TVs now. It's just, and then, you know, a bar, and they bring in food and stuff. And they have a change machine that you can use for the vending machine. It's just funny, you see how things are added over the years.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we need some snacks. Well, I'm not going to give free snacks. I'll buy a vending machine. All right, great. Oh, what am I going to do? I can't get quarters. All right, I'm going to buy a change machine. And
you know, it's starting to come to me now. Did somebody email us a photo to this or something?
Might have.
And it was a link. It looked like it was like a barn, but it was a big garage.
Yeah.
I think somebody sent us a photo of this with a link to the story. I think I did see this now. I just don't remember it being 557.
I was coming back, and it was just funny to me because he's really good friends with one of my friends. So, and I know that friend wasn't the one that told me about it initially.
Yeah, I think that's what
it was. Small world, right?
Yeah.
But here's the really cool thing. I mean, that's already kind of cool. I mean, I took a photo and put it on Facebook, and you know, people are already telling my wife that I need to, you know, close off our garage and turn it into... which is a big problem in living in Florida if we don't have a basement, so us guys don't have man caves in Florida.
Yeah.
But the really cool thing about this is it's been going on for 15 years, every Tuesday night. Even when he's not home, people come over and play in this room.
Holy cow.
Every Tuesday for 15 years, except for three, which were Christmases.
Holy cow.
And then they play other nights, too, but I think it's mostly Tuesday. But it was really kind of cool, and everybody knows everybody. And then, of course, you know, outsiders like me come in, and you know, you're treated like, you know, long-lost friends. And it was kind of cool. I sat there, and we played a little $5 tournament, and, of course, played some cribbage. and smoked some cigars. But I was just sitting in a rush, and I, you know, I kind of watched because people were kind of broken up. You had, you know, one table here playing cards, one table there watching the baseball game, and I just, you know, I kind of welled up a little bit.
Oh, that's,
you know,
cool.
It was just this kind of cool thing, this community, and it's not just all neighbors. I mean, the people drove there, so I mean, kind of turned into the community, and people would just, hey, it's Tuesday night, yep, gotta go to the 557.
What kind of games were they playing?
You know what? I don't know what they're playing cash. I think it might have been stud. Actually, to be honest, I didn't. I was so mesmerized by everything else. I played Miss Pac-Man, and yeah, I was in the humidor picking out a cigar and stuff like that. But again, playing for, you know, dimes and stuff. I mean, so it's
right.
Not a, you know, it's not a game that Pre-Bahara is going to shut down.
Okay.
But when we played the tournament, we played No Limit Hold'em. But you know what's funny then is you've got a professional tournament director, our crew Ramsey, our cruise guy, right?
Yeah.
Our mutual friend Oli is a poker dealer. You have me, a poker magazine owner, and so we were all designing this tournament structure on the fly for this little $5 per fun tournament we played. And they're like, hey, we're going to do rebuys. Okay, great, we'll do rebuys. And it was just kind of, it was just a really neat thing. And the best part, I thought, was once I walked in, they gave me a little tour, and then they gives me a playing card, right? And it's like, everybody comes in here, we give them a playing card, you sign your name, we put it on the wall.
Oh, cool.
So, I mean, entire walls were just covered with these playing cards with people's names on it. So I didn't see where mine went, but now I'm actually an unofficial member of the 557.
Now, did you do the ugly squiggle, or can people actually know who Scott Long is?
I actually slowed down and did a very nice
picture.
And now I'm thinking maybe I need to start doing that more often.
Thank you, because that thing that you do, it looks like you sneezed halfway through your signature and then you didn't fix it, you know? And I'm sure that just drives everybody crazy. At least now people know who Scott Long is, you know, they see your name up there. And good, I'm proud of you. That's cool. Good trip.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was Minnesota, and like I said, I'm in Chicago now. I'm running around a couple poker rooms, hit a couple today, I'm going to hit a couple more tomorrow. So next week we'll bring back all your favorite Neuromo stuff and talk a little bit more about Chicago.
Yeah, that's right. We'll wrap up O'Malley's move as well.
Absolutely.
All right. Glad things are going well for you. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.